Good afternoon. This is Nick Augustine here for the Michael V. Favia Healthcare Practice and Consultants Podcast. Today's Healthcare Practice and Consultants Podcast brought to you by the law firm of Michael V. Favia and Associates. Our guest is Mr. Marion Neal, and he is the Healthcare Practice Consultant serving private practitioners and small to medium-sized businesses associates with compliance for solutions for HIPAA. Today we're going to talk about how to stop ignoring HIPAA. Well, HIPAA, as we all know, is the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, and Mr. Neal is going to offer some compliance solutions to private healthcare practitioners with HIPAASimple.com. The nuts and bolts of what we're going to talk today about is how not to get in trouble, how to work on making sure we're HIPAA compliant, and as we were just talking about before the show, instead of using the big old binders of the past, they use software solutions now to make all this pretty easy and simple. Marion Neal, again, is a healthcare practice consultant serving private practitioners and small to medium-sized business associates with HIPAA-compliant solutions. Let's say good afternoon to Marion Neal.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
All right. Well, Marion, I look forward to talking about things. I'm going to break it down for everybody listening. We're going to talk about first, we're going to talk about HIPAA, introduction and purpose. You know, we know everybody out there knows what HIPAA is, but it's always nice to cover this, especially for people who are new to healthcare practice. We'll talk about why too many private practitioners fall short in their HIPAA compliance, and we'll talk about solving healthcare private practitioner HIPAA compliance problems. But we have a disclaimer, by the way. This is a general information program, and any advice shared on this show does not constitute legal advice. Communication with any attorneys or guests on our show does not give rise to professional or attorney-client relations. If you have questions about any of the consultants on the Healthcare Practice and Consultants podcast, please call the Favia Law Firm directly in Chicago at 773-631-4580. Again, 773-631-4580. All right, Marion Neal, let's go through what HIPAA is. So let's just go through the drill. What's HIPAA? Let's introduce it. What's the introduction and purpose? And what is HIPAA Simple? And some examples of the regulations involved. Basically, why we should all be paying attention to this and what happens if we screw up?
Well, you know, HIPAA, we think of it in healthcare, especially in private practice area, that it's talking about privacy and security. That's the part that we deal with. But it has, you know, universal identifiers and saving, you know, a health savings accounts, a lot of other things in the law. But what we're talking about is the privacy and security issues. And what we at HIPAASimple.com do is we've come up finally with a way, after doing this for a lot of years, we've come up with a way that smaller private practices, the people that don't have a professional compliance specialist full time on their practice, you know, they tell the practice manager that he or she is going to be the privacy officer, which they say okay, but they don't have time to do anything anyway. so those are the practices that we help. You know, from say a workforce of say 5 people at the very small end up to maybe 75 people. After that, you should probably have your own compliance officer, and we can help them, but we're specializing in the smaller ones.
You know, it's interesting to think about the compliance officer role there because, you know, how much work does that take? And when you say to someone, you have a, you know, smaller practice, hey, you're the privacy officer, I can imagine that billing and things like that can come first. So I can see how those things can stack up. It's like having my things of to be filed and what needs to go in client files. And, you know, dust is gathering.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, you can know that HIPAA is very important because if you get it wrong, it can really hurt you. It can hurt the patient that's affected as well. But at the same time, the insurance claims that need to be refiled, they have a deadline because if you wait too long on those, you won't get paid. And so there's always things that, not that it's more important, but it's more pressing in the practice. And that really keeps. It's what keeps a lot of people from a lot of practices from getting HIPAA compliant. And there's a lot of things that people generally know about, you know, and so you have your notice of privacy practices that you pass out. You tell everybody to keep their voices down, to clear the screens of the computer screens whenever they walk away from the computer. All the things that all the little things that help. And so a lot of people are doing those things, but that's not what achieves HIPAA compliance. And I can give you a quick example of what that is, and it's actually a recent case of a compliance fee. There was a practice of three offices that were employing a transcription service. Transcription service screwed up with their computer. They leaked some information out onto the Internet. They realized their mistake. They disconnected from the Internet and didn't tell anybody what happened. But the way it leaked onto the Internet is through the web crawlers. So now if you put in a patient's name on the list of possible things you were looking for, you would see patient's name, provider's name, the date of service, the diagnosis, and the first few lines of the transcription. If you clicked on that, you wouldn't get anything else because they had disconnected, but that stuff was still out there. The practice found out about it. I mean, they didn't do it, but they found out. They went to work. They organized an emergency team. They got all those indexes off. They notified the government. They notified all the patients. They did everything exactly as they should. And in the end, months later, when it's all taken care of and all done and all settled, the practice, not the transcription service, but the practice was fined $417,000. This is a little three-office practice. Now, the...
Wow.
The transcription service wasn't fined anything for a couple of reasons. Number one, they're probably really small. And it's to some degree, it's like, you know, the report of the death, the bank robber, why do you rob banks? Because that's where the money is. So they went where the money was, which was the practice. But when you read the determination that they made, the number one reason was that they fined the practice was they failed to conduct a risk assessment and thereby implement security measures and training, et cetera, based on that risk assessment. And that's something that HIPAA enforcers are insisting on, is you have that risk assessment or risk analysis done. The other four reasons that they were fined were all things that the transcription service did, not that the practice did. So that's kind of the way it works. So that risk assessment is something, even though you're doing a lot of things right in HIPAA, without that, the government, if push comes to shove, they consider that you haven't done a thing. Because if you don't know what your risks are and what you should be working on, then you haven't really paid attention to HIPAA compliance. And that's one of the things we solve with our clients.
Wow, I can imagine that $417,000 fine. Now, did they have, when someone gets a fine like that, is there insurance that covers the fine?
You could have insurance, I guess. But again, I mean, the insurer is going to be looking for similar things to the enforcers are looking for. Is, are you really trying? Are you trying,
right.
You know, are you doing a decent job of, you know, are you driving safely? Do you have a lot of tickets, you know, or and maybe, you know, we don't want to insure you anymore if you're not really trying.
Yeah,
so,
working in an insurance defense firm, one of the things that, and also on personal injury side, you know, we know that one of the first things that an insurer does is look at the policy and ask, has the client complied with the policy? And I know that one of the law firms I worked at had they were trying to prevent filing mishaps and things falling through the cracks,
right,
and deadlines. So when we had outgoing correspondence, we had to have it saved in several different areas. And one of those was literally a manual book, like a register when you'd go to a wedding or something and you sign your name in and where you were from and all that. And so we had multiple redundant backup systems for outgoing correspondence, things like that, so we could back up and prove things. And that was required, actually, in the terms of the insurance policy itself, which I wonder is, you know, so I see all these people saying, well, I have malpractice coverage and I've got insurance, and right, but that's all good until you get your claim gets denied because you had some element that, you know, went against your policy. So, I mean,
right.
Even so, I knew someone who had a total loss on a collision. and their auto insurance denied them because they had undisclosed, the kid was in law school at the time, and he had undisclosed drivers who were also renting in the same apartment complex. So he had roommates who had access to car that you know, yeah, they have to prove they're insured or not, you know, so...
Yeah,
you can have all the coverage you think you have, but, you know, so, yeah, we look at this risk analysis and you say, well, you know, what's my risk? Well, you know, I don't know. What, you know, determine risk analysis, not knowing how to conduct that. So that moves that into our, you know, area where we talk about where people fall short in HIPAA compliance, you know, because they're busy. HIPAA is important, but, again, we talk about it gets on the back shelf. And, you know, we hear so much. And it's my fault. I'm going to take the blame for this. I write so much for Mike Favia about these opioid takedowns that everyone is so concerned about their opioid problem and all that. They're like, they're worried about that and the takedowns and the federal officers on the door, and they're not doing their compliance. So everybody can blame me. My fault. I'll take the heat for that. But talking seriously, though, this risk analysis – you know, HIPAA and its importance. Let's talk more about that and what that all means.
All right. Well, the a risk analysis is really it sounds simple, and the government Health and Human Services publishes a lot of documents on here's how you do a risk analysis. But if you start reading those, you'll find you're deep in the weeds pretty quickly. But what it does is it examines all the ways that the patient health information, where it goes, how it's transmitted, who has access to it, and then all the side issues, who has access to the electronic system, who has access to the building itself. And you have to kind of enumerate all these things and say, okay, now what risk do I have? And on some of them, you're going to need your computer support specialist to help you a little bit on that, and we'll need to use them for help as well. But then you start saying, okay, now here's a risk that I can mitigate, so I'm going to do this. The way we do is you spread the whole process out over months so that we don't take too much of your time. It's not like paying an expensive consultant to come in and interrupt everybody's schedule. It's just doing a couple of hours a month, and we will get you a complete risk analysis and all the other pieces to HIPAA compliance that you will need. So, and you know, we do it a little at a time. We know what it's supposed to look like when we're all done, and we will ask you the questions that'll give us information so we can make it do that.
Absolutely. So the risk analysis, and we were talking about not conducting the risk analysis. Can we talk a little bit more about that risk analysis itself?
Sure.
And describe that.
So ours comes in three parts. Ours is a security survey, the longest part. Then the next one is a risk assessment, where we go through and examine the survey and see where the risks are. And the third one is risk management. We make a plan of how those risks get done. So the security survey, basically, we contact. I did a portion of one this morning. I contacted one of our clients, a new client, and I told her I was going to spend 20 minutes with her on the phone and ask her some questions. And so we asked questions about the office. You know, how it's locked, who has keys, how you get keys back. You know, that's just one little piece. So. And then we ask, what else was there on there? Oh, we ask about access to the computer systems, about the server. Is the server on site? Is it in the cloud? Who manages the server? Things like that. So we come up with we know the information we need to do the risk analysis. So we just ask simple questions to get it done. So then I take that and I just. Into our automated system, I just kind of plug in the answers that they give me, and it starts building the security survey.
Yeah,
and
so
I'll probably talk to her three more times for about 20 minutes each time, and then I'll have a list of questions that their computer, at some point, you know, over the next few months, I'll send them a list of questions that the computer support people need to come in and answer for each one of their devices, each one of their desktops or laptops, for instance. And it's simple things like what are the logins on this system, which logins have expired, is the operating system on automatic update, is there malware software, is it being automatically updated, is it turned on, has anybody installed some games or something that aren't supposed to be there, and so on. I mean, all sorts of questions like that they'll go spend about 15 minutes with each device, and they'll do this once a year. And from that and all the other answers to questions we have, we'll build the complete security survey.
So when we have our security survey, where does that security survey go, or is that a document that needs to be filed? I guess I'm looking at the process of being compliant. Is there a requirement to communicate that with anyone, or is that just your own internal document?
That there's a requirement to have that information available and to be acting on it. No, you don't have to communicate that to anyone unless they ask for it, either in a random audit or an audit based on the fact that something bad happened. So you don't have to send that information in, but you need to have it available if they ask.
Mm-hmm. So the random audits, how often do those occur?
They're pretty rare in the small end. They're pretty rare in the small end. But you will get an audit. You'll often get an audit if something bad happens. I mean, not a misdirected fax or something small, but if those things happen, we'll take care of those. We'll show you how to take care of those as well. But it's something bigger than that. A lost laptop, a lost unencrypted laptop. That's a terrible thing to have happen. And all sorts of bad activity.
A lost laptop, or you have an employee who goes rogue, that could be a problem. I'm also thinking about a lot of the incentives for, I talk a lot about the opioid epidemic and the diversion of drugs and all that, and there's so many people involved in the chain in a healthcare practice. And I remember writing an article for Mike Fabio's firm about the nurse who fell asleep at the pill cart. She literally, pills were missing, so I fell asleep. I mean, you would not believe the crazy things that happen. You can watch all these TV shows. Like, I'm watching that show, The Resident, now on Fox. And, we think as consumers, we look at professions as if they're perfect. You look at your teachers as you're a child, that they know everything. You look at your lawyer. You expect the lawyer knows all the laws. You expect the doctors. My goodness, we expect our doctors literally to be walking miracle workers.
Right.
So we are taught as consumers of, no matter what it is, that everything is on this perfect level. And then it's like the people who work on the inside, and whether you're going to an Applebee's and someone who works in the kitchen and says, man, I'd never eat here. Or the person who, goes to have surgery at the place where they say, well, did you know that the chief of, surgery is having tremors in his hand, all sorts of things that can, go wrong. So we assume everything's perfect, but we know they're not. And there are so many times that even within your chain of people, the smallest, weakest, link is, so you look at just that. You have an employee who is, not returning things in that security access, turning passwords on and off. Software solutions might come into play, I'm guessing, too.
I'm sorry, say it again.
With software solutions, is there software involved that people can help track things?
Ours is really a pretty much automated system that we've built, and it's part of part of our portal. We have a portal for our clients, and there they manage their list of employees, list of business associates, and so on. So we can demonstrate again in an audit. We can demonstrate they have complete control of their employees, when they started, when they left, when they were trained, and, you know, the business associates, you know, the fact they have the agreement signed, and, you know, here's the notes on our relationship with them, and so on. So we have a portal, and so some of the information on our documents for risk assessment comes, you know, just is already there in the portal. We just pull it out, and other parts are we just feed it answers to our questions, and it generates the rest.
Yeah, I'm going to tell people now. Go ahead.
I was just going to say I know what you mean about, you know, the issues of even when you're doing your best to keep it right. I was in a doctor's office about a year ago. They ushered me into one of the exam rooms. Said, just go ahead and have a seat. The doctor will be in a minute. Okay. The assistant left, and I looked at the computer screen, and all the patient records for the previous patient are still on the screen. And I'm thinking, you know, it's just one little thing of forgetting to clear the screen or forgetting to sign out of that record. And there it is.
Well, you know, and also HIPAA compliance is not only in doctor's offices. I worked for a bank that had a trust department, and because we were flex the Section 125 IRS stuff, dependent care expenses, medical
right.
things. We had HIPAA compliance, so it's
right.
not only hospitals and healthcare facilities. HIPAA can apply to a whole broad spectrum of people.
Sure. Health insurance companies are all have to be HIPAA compliant, and the larger organizations, they have whole departments devoted to it, and when there's a breach of millions of names and records, that usually comes from one of the big, the big hospital systems or the big healthcare, insurance companies. But
all right. Well,
there's a lot of people that have to be in compliance with it.
All right. Well, getting compliant is what we're going to do now, and we're going to talk about. We kind of danced around a few of the different things that HIPAA Simple can offer to people. So let's go through solving these private practitioner compliance problems, starting with addressing the process and then going down the hit parade of things that people can kind of take notes on so they know what your service can do for them. And by the way, I will tell people, check out the website while we're talking about this, HIPAASimple.com. You'll be surprised at how affordable this is too. So let's kind of run down our hit parade of what they can expect.
Sure. Well, some ways that people are trying to solve the problems is they're buying printed materials. And we're pretty familiar with that because for the first 10 years of our existence, that's what we did. But then we realized that printed materials work. They're permanent, but they end up permanently on a shelf and then kind of covered with dust. And so we'd keep following up with people that bought the materials, and they'd say, "Oh no, we haven't done any training for a couple of years, but we'll get right to it," that kind of thing. So that happens a lot. The printed materials always sound good, but when you see the amount of the number of pages that you just bought, you're not going to, most people aren't going to get all the way through it. The other thing is hiring consultants to come in and do a risk assessment. It's an okay approach, I guess. It's usually pretty expensive, talking about, from a few to several thousands of dollars, plus they come in and spend 10 days, 20 days in your practice, hanging around, asking questions, kind of getting in the way. And then remember that a risk analysis is only good for 12 months. So once they give you that document, 13 months from now, it's out of date. So that's, our approach is different, between our services and our portal features. We provide all the training materials for you, and we help, on the portal, you can put down exactly when you did the training, so you can look at somebody that's been working for you for 4 years, and you can tell every date that they ever got trained. And so if they say, "Well, I didn't know that," you can say, "Oh yeah, you did. I didn't know I wasn't supposed to do that." So, "Well, we've trained you, five times, so you should have known." But we have all the training for staff and for managers, people that are going to be in charge of the HIPAA for the practice. We have special training information for them, and of course always support that they call us if they have any questions. We help the staff look after the practitioners. Because sometimes they're the ones that you need to keep, you need to gently remind them. Sometimes they're great at it, and sometimes not. But it's but they aren't always paying attention, so we help them manage those efforts as well. We do it by working with the staff about 2 hours per month, but it's just about every month. So we're constantly there, but we won't interrupt much. We'll schedule a time, 20 minutes, to ask a bunch of questions, and then we'll talk to you again the following week. So it's really easy to get it done without interrupting what has to be done there on a day-to-day basis. And you can always call us for any types of questions or issues, or if somebody has a complaint. And I'll tell you, we've had weird things happen. One time, one of our clients called up and said, somebody came in and said that they wanted a copy of a record. And I said, well, we'll make a copy and call you when it's ready. And they said, no, I want them right now. And I said, I don't have to give them to you right now. And I said, well, you're right. You have 30 days to comply with that request, and you need to print out from the portal the little piece of paper that they answer exactly what they want on that in that copy. And she said, well, here, you tell them. And she handed the phone to the patient that was standing there at the front desk, who is mad because he wanted a copy right then. So we have weird things like that happen, but we can handle it. If we end up that close to the situation, we can certainly handle it. So we're really a partner, not a publisher. We're a partner in getting it, getting the HIPAA compliance done for private practice.
There you go. How often does HIPAA change? When we were talking earlier in the program or before the program, I was talking about search engine marketing and how, my goodness, it's a moving target. What is true year to the next is different. So, and I'm assuming, with technology always changing in new ways, that we can lose information or have it hacked or stolen or whatnot. How often are there changes to HIPAA? Not HIPAA itself, but are there amendments or new policy things that are within the law? I'm just wondering how that works.
Yeah, so the HIPAA, was... the original regulations came out like 2002, 2003, and 2004 for three different parts: the privacy, security, and enforcement. But then the High Tech Act threw in some more changes, and that was 2009, I believe. But that had some things making business associates directly responsible to HIPAA and some other changes. But other than that, those are the regulation changes, the only two in a sense. But what they have changed is they changed the focus. For instance, risk analysis, that was mentioned way back in 2002, the very first publication of regulations. What that didn't say, but they're saying now that it means, is that you have to have the risk analysis. Because otherwise, because that's the only way you'll find out. You'll be able to say, I know what my risks are, and I'm addressing them. So it didn't happen. They never said that earlier on, but as things progressed, it became the way they interpreted that regulation and how they would apply it, in problem situations. So it does change. It does change. Now, it doesn't have to be the regulation. It's just the way they're enforcing it can change.
As you think about things like HIPAA and controlling access to information and technology systems, I just wonder if that also dovetails with finding new software and technology solutions to not only better manage your patient's data, but also your patient, communication process and keeping involved with them. It's sort of more of a marketing thing, but it just kind of directs me to the Health Practice Advisors Group, which you're a part of, as well as Mike Favia and so many other people have been on this program. I just, with such a great group of people. I just wanted to see if you might want to tell a little bit about your experiences and give health practice advisors a little bit of a plug.
Well, sure. You know, I haven't been there very long, but I've been very impressed with the people there. And it is a wide range, you know, people that specialize in communications, in practice layout, and, you know, from architectural standpoint, from the furnishing standpoint, from financing practices. It's the legal, of course, with Mike, and the electronics, system. So it's a wide ranging group, and it's a and we appreciate, you know, your support on this, Nick. You've done, you know, everybody is pretty pleased with the exposure you've given, because it's a good bunch of people, very smart, and sharing information, and it's a factory. You know, we meet second Tuesday of every month, so next Tuesday I'll be there again.
Excellent. Well, I just like it because as things expand, technology allows, there are more professionals going out into their own and starting their own practices. And, you know, not only law firms, you know, what I came from, you know, people would leave those big law firms and start their own shop and go on outward that way. But now that's also within healthcare, that's something that can do as well, with, you know, physician practices, dental practices. I've been learning more and more by all the people in this group how, you know, there's funding out there for people to buy and sell and start different things. So there's a lot more, there's a lot more flexibility and there's a lot more movement among professional groups, and your head can spin if you don't have that whole administration set forth. I mean, yeah, I wrote an article the other day about starting a medical office and the list of people you have to hire. I mean, you need a bus to get all these people to your office to talk about, you know, where do you start? You know, we've got, you know, lawyers, accountants. I mean, half of it's all, you know, it seems like the whole thing is to prevent yourself from getting, you know, sued or lose your license. It's like, you know, are you help people and save lives, or just, you're right, just protect yourself, you know, so
yeah, exactly.
I always tell it goes, but.
And it's nice that the group, because of the group, you know, one of us can be dealing with the practice, and we can help when we see that practice needs, you know, some other kinds of help. We can just, you know, introduce them, you know, can add. So it adds to what we each individually can do for the practice.
Yeah, well, there's so many people out there that there's people that out there have services that you don't even know that you need that until you have that, and then you don't want to go without it. You know, I mean, look at things like just basic technologies of, you know, having Google Maps tell us how to get where we're going instead of, you know, we've become reliant on this. So, you know, again, when I tell people, look at this HipAA Simple website, and again, for the very, very reasonable prices here and all sorts of, I mean, it's very turnkey and you don't have to really do anything. And it sounds like you all don't bother the people too much. I mean, I don't know what to say no to. It sounds fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's part of the list of jobs I had that list of, you know, along with also police officer, truck driver, everything else. I want to do everybody else's job for like 1 or 2 weeks just because the world's interesting and there's a lot of interesting stuff out there. So I encourage people to go check it out. HipAA Simple.com. Again, HIPAA is HIPAA Simple.com. So people who want to get in touch with Marion Neal here, do give a call to Mike Favia and Associates, 773-631-4580. Additionally, Marion, what's other good ways for people to get in touch with you? Phone number and also email if you'd like.
Our 1-800 number is 800-279-3668. And as I told you, we're on the phone a lot, so if you need to leave a message, please do so, and we'll call you back as soon as we can.
All right, good deal. All right, if there's anything new about HIPAA or anything, where can we find stories? So with healthcare regulation and compliance, I always go to the, for Illinois, the IDFPR website, because they produce all the discipline reports. If I wanted to find out about people like HIPAA compliance infractions and things, where would I go to find that? Because that's really interesting.
Oh gosh, there. You know, I get several different industry publications.
Sure, they're in there.
I apologize, Nick. I can't pull one, you know, off the top of my head.
Off the top of your head. All right. Well, it's out there. I'm sure if you Google for it, you know, Google for HIPAA violations. Because if I was looking at this and I were the compliance officer going, why should I hire these people? You know, go look at those. Like, you know, oh my goodness, $417,000 fine.
You'll find there's a lot of money changing hands on those. In that list, to the government in that list for fines.
There you go. Well, let's keep more money in our practitioners' piggy bank
right.
and help them not get
exactly
busted.
Right.
You know, spend a little bit of money on being compliant. It's not that big of a deal. I can't stress it enough though. Compliance in one aspect of your practice is building a culture of compliance. Instead of a culture of, well, we have insurance, so we can ignore HIPAA.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, that's a really dangerous thing to do. And remember, every time you have a failure, most likely there's a patient that's in some way been hurt. You know, I mean, their information has been exposed.
Right, and if you have a potential, you know, patient issue where you've got a patient injury or something, you could have a license and regulatory problem on there as well, and it's not going to help you if everything in your shop is, you know, half plugged in, and you know that you know you've got you don't have a risk analysis, you don't have anything on file for that, you're not in compliance,
and
half of your computers are all plugged into a daisy chain list, you know, a bunch of power surge protectors into one outlet or something goofy. So a holistic overall approach to good doctor, you know, like so.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Marion,
I've
enjoyed this time. I encourage people when they find these programs, please share it out there because, you know, even though you may think, well, I don't know any doctors or HIPAA compliant people on my website or my, you know, Facebook or LinkedIn, but you would be surprised. Again, the guy who works at the bank may have to deal with HIPAA. Your insurance provider may have to deal with HIPAA. It's not just doctors. So it's good information, and especially for those who aren't in the daily health practice arena who have to deal with HIPAA, I mean, their heads may be spinning on some of this stuff. So give these folks at HIPAA Simple a call. Great program, great information. Marion, thank you for your time today.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity and very much.
All right. Well, you give a high five and thumbs up to all my friends there at Health Practice Advisors in Chicago.
I will.
Next time I'm up there from Texas, I will try to. I'd love to be able to stop in and make a meeting. I make it up there a couple times a year, preferably when it's warmer out, you know, not freezing cold. So.
Hey, it's nice now. It's nice now. Come on up.
There you go. All right. Well, thank you and have a good day. And
all right,
thank you again,
Nick,
all for listening.
Thank you, everyone, for listening.